Wine. It is a global industry. It is a huge industry. It is an ancient industry.
And when you're on the other side of this question...
So tell me about this wine nose and the legs and everything.
Oh, no.
It can be kind of scary. I mean that in like a first world problem sort of way, right?
But for sure.
Yeah, but it is true that wine has so much judgment attached to it, right? Like it's this thing that's super subjective, and if you say the wrong thing or you don't like the right wine, it feels like it reflects badly on you.
Right, like you don't have good taste.
And other than actually knowing what you're talking about,
which should be a last resort,
which we definitely don't. How do you know whether the wine you're drinking is good or not?
I have a Cab that's rated 90, Cabernet Sauvignon from Paso Robles that's rated 90. I've got a Cabernet Sauvignon blend that's rated 90. And then a Zinfandel Petit Sirah blend, actually, that's rated 90.
Michael Keller is the owner of the Blending Lab. It is a relatively new winery, and he and his partner Magdalena Wojcik just recently had three of their wines rated a 90 by Wine Enthusiast magazine.
I just woke up in the morning and I saw it in my inbox, actually, and it tells you what the wine itself was and what the corresponding score was.
When you read it, you did like a fist pump in your underpants? Or?
For sure. I was like, oh my gosh, thank goodness.
Co-founders?
Yeah. Well, she woke up next to me, Max did. So that was easy.
So I was pretty proud of that because I kind of went off the whim when I created the double cabs and blend, and that was our first 90, and I was really excited.
The wine scoring system is controversial. It has a lot of critics. And there are a bunch of studies that show that even wine experts, when they do these blind tastings, have a lot of trouble telling the difference between a low-quality wine and a high-quality wine. And giving something as subjective and esoteric as wine a numerical score seems a little counterintuitive, possibly even a little absurd.
Yes.
But in spite of all of this, wine scores pack a powerful economic punch. They've got legs.
Whoa.
This is The Indicator. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith.
And I'm Cardiff Garcia. Today on the show, the weird world of wine scores. Also, we pretend like we know what we're talking about and discuss some of the finer points of wine.
And so you pick it up and you give it some quick sniffs and you try to figure out what color does the wine smell like?
What?
In terms of fruit.
I don't know.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Flatiron Books, publisher of Factfulness, 10 Reasons We're Wrong About the World and Why Things Are Better Than You Think. Bill Gates calls Factfulness an indispensable guide to thinking clearly about the world, available where books are sold.
Wine scores were popularized by this legendary figure in the wine industry, a man named Robert Parker. He was a banker in the 70s, and he just loved wine, and so he started this little independent wine newsletter.
So Parker started scoring wines using a very simple system. Michael Keller, the owner of the Blending Lab, says those scores were game-changing.
He established a 50 to a 100-point scale, where basically the whole point was if you're 90 to 100%, you're roughly sitting at an A, and if you're around 50%, you're getting an F.
Now, the mysterious world of fruit-forward, velvety-nosed, weak-leg cherry cola notes with an earthy finish? It just kind of broke open. Wines got a grade. A child could understand the system.
I have no idea what you just said.
Me neither.
Other places started rating wine, too, though, including Wine Enthusiast magazine, which gave Blending Lab its three scores of 90. Michael and his partner Magdalena say they've got some problems with the whole idea. But it's also the case that getting those 90 scores had real and concrete results for their business.
The wine scoring system is pretty useful in getting into the door, right? Because if you're not ranking at least in the high 80s or 90s, it's really hard for somebody to pay attention to you. So if I'm trying to sell my wine outside of the tasting room and go to a bar or go to a retailer, they're going to ask me for my scores, actually. And if I don't have them, I lack credibility.
At this point, I feel like our wines have kind of made it. We're not just a small startup. We're starting to get into the bigger leagues where, you know, we're starting to gain some credibility in the industry as well. And we're able to say, you know, this wine got rated 90 points.
And 90 points is high. But there is a score that Michael and Magdalena aspire to, a score that they say would catapult their business and their prices to another level.
I think the sweet spot is ultimately to try to hit the 95 mark, because that's where... you start to see people really pick up on, hey, this is a really interesting, unique wine. I want in on that.
That is today's Planet Money Indicator 95, the sweet spot score. When you hit a 95, people really do want in on your wine. And this is not just Michael's opinion. In 2000, the LiveX 100 was founded. That's the London International Vintners Exchange.
This index tracks the prices of the 100 most sought-after wines. And the index uses Robert Parker's scores as a kind of litmus test. It pretty much only includes wines that Parker has scored at a 95 or above. And one industry study found that a 10% increase in the score from Robert Parker and another influential critic led to a 7% increase in the price of that wine.
And this can have a big effect on different parts of the wine business. So, for example, Robert Parker famously likes bold red wines like Cabernet Sauvignons and Pinot Noirs. He favors them over other wines like Zinfandels.
Zin is a much older grape with far more history than Cabernet Sauvignon even has. You don't see a lot of Zins getting a lot of big scores. And as a result, as a vineyard manager, you are trying to think about what grapes you're going to plant because you need people like us to buy those grapes and convert it into wines that we can pass on to our customers. What are we going to clamor for? We're going to clamor for the wines that are going to get the highest scores.
Part of the reason that Michael says this scoring system has become so powerful is this.
So now I'm going to make you do the wine thing. So tell me about this wine, nose and the legs and everything.
Oh, no.
This is David DeSano. And Cardiff, he looks like a guy who knew a lot about wine, right?
Sure.
But even still, even for him, talking about wine with confidence is just hard. David has been coming to the blending lab since it opened, and he loved these wines before they got their high scores. But he was still psyched when they got their high scores.
I knew what I liked about it, and I didn't
feel validating a little bit.
It did actually feel a little validating. I'm like, wow, I don't have bad taste then, you know, because I'm not an expert or anything, but I do enjoy good wine, and I think it was validating, yeah, actually.
And ultimately, this is why Blending Lab owner Michael Keller likes the wine scoring system, or at least doesn't mind it.
It's probably served to basically take the barrier down on entering into the wine space, and so you have this bigger consumer base who's now clamoring for wines.
What Michael's saying here is that the scores have become like a kind of gateway, a way for people to enter into the intimidating world of wine and feel confident investing in it, trading it, sometimes even drinking it.
While we were at the Blending Lab, in the name of journalism,
of course,
we decided that we should try one of their 90-point wines just to assess the validity of the scores for ourselves. And we looped in our producer, Darius Rafieyan, and our editor, Patty Hirsch, you know, just to make for a more rigorous sample size.
And to do the one thing that we know for sure wine is good for. Have a meandering conversation with people you like.
Oh, it's true. So what's the verdict of this 90-point wine? What do we think?
It really tastes like it has alcohol in it. Definitely alcoholic.
I'm getting tobacco there. It's quite a little smoky.
Very good. He said tobacco. Did you read this? Did you read about this?
Green
of course
olive.
I did. It was
smoky.
Oh. Your country has 4 million people in it, and it produced Swift, Beckett, Joyce, Wild.
That's a great,
You guys invented whiskey, you know?
Yeah, we did invent whiskey.
And yet you guys haven't managed to come up with any decent food in all that time.
Yeah, what's up with that?
That's not true. The food in Ireland's exceptionally.
I was a fiddler on the roof when I was a theater kid. I was the fiddler on the roof. And one night I actually fell off the roof in the middle of the performance, right onto Tevye's dinner table.
That's not true.
No, 100% true. It was in the middle of the scene, I fell off the roof, landed smack on Tevye's dinner table in the middle of a really like tense scene, and everyone in the theater just stopped.
Do you love me?
I had to just kind of ad-lib my way off stage.
You're still recording?
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Flatiron Books, publisher of New York Times bestseller, Factfulness. The Economist says it paints an optimistic picture of progress, available where books are sold.